What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here, Friday edition of the show on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, who also covers the team for The Athletic. He's Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drancer, what's going on?
Well, I'm excited, honestly, going into this weekend because I honestly feel like this is sort of one last chance to exhale before things will kind of get fast and furious and a ramp up to the Vancouver Canucks season, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got three preseason games in the next 4 days. By the time you get to Friday of next week, you know, they're going to have 3 days off before that game. That's like dress rehearsal time, yep. Right? Like, we're basically a week from today, we're going to have a really good sense, not a perfect sense, but a really good sense of what the club's 23-man roster looks like. Like, this right here, these next 96 hours or whatever it is going to kind of determine, you know, can Ratu play well enough to not just break camp with the team, but maybe cause Pius Suter to move to wing?
Mm-hmm.
Can Daniel Sprong push for a top six spot? Will Jonathan Lekaramäki make the team? Like, we're going to have to wait, you know, another 10 days to have actual answers, but we're going to have a very good grasp in terms of assessing what this team's likely to look like to open the air, you know, by Monday. Like, we're going to know soon now. And so I find that kind of exciting. This weekend's going to be an exciting time for those Canucks fans, those who cover the team, who like to watch these sorts of things with, you know, an attentive eye.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They play Seattle tonight. Of course, we'll touch on that more in the whiteboard momentarily. We'll look ahead to that game as well with Allison Lucan, one of our favorites. She'll join us at 12:30. I also got to say, I'm a little nervous today. I feel like I have to be on my best behavior. Our boss, Canberra, has made the trip down from his executive penthouse office here at Rogers Radio headquarters. He's filling in, graciously pinch hitting and filling in because of a rash of absences. So Cam is staring right at me from the operator producer studio, and it's making me a little nervous, I got to say.
Yeah. Do penthouses usually have no windows? Is that like a standard thing?
You guys wouldn't believe the luxury that Bear works in. It's unimaginable here.
Hey, Cam, will you remind me how much vacation we get?
Just work, God. Just get into it. Let's go. Also, sorry. A rash of absences. I'm right here.
Sorry.
That's true. Of course, we have intern a rash here. I did not intend for that pun, but hey, it worked out. All right. Without further ado, and you know, hopefully this we'll make sure Barra doesn't fire us here. We'll get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, September 27th. Headlines, as mentioned, the Canucks going down to Seattle to play another preseason game, their third. Not televised, this one, but of course, you'll be able to hear it all here on Sportsnet 650, a full pregame game and postgame coverage. So that's it. And, you know, is there a way you want to frame this one kind of big picture? We'll get into the lineup notes and all that and who's going down and stuff in the lineup notes section. Do you have much to say about this one other than, as you said, it's kind of the start of this really, really hectic period where we might start to really separate who has a legitimate chance from making this team from who's going to be down in Abbotsford pretty quickly here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to watch is just going to be which wingers can kind of seize the opportunities that they're given, right? And which wingers sort of further down the lineup can force the sort of equation so that they're in the mix in sort of future games, right? Like, I feel like we should have a sense after what happened in Abbotsford that we're going to see Daniel Sprong, like, get a look on the power play or yep. get a look with skilled players. It would seem like malpractice not to, given how well he played. And so, you know, we expect Sherwood, for example, right, to get that look with DeBrusk and company. And yeah, he needs to take advantage of that, especially because Jonathan Lekaramäki sort of didn't in Abbotsford on, was it Wednesday night?
Wednesday night, yep.
But also, right, he needs to outperform a guy lower in the lineup. Sherwood's going to be on this team. We know that. But I do think there's still some curiosity, both internally and among fans, and certainly among Satyar Shah, about sort of what Kiefer Sherwood can produce offensively. Everywhere I go, people are like, what can Kiefer Sherwood produce offensively?
And I really? Everywhere you go?
Everywhere I go.
Checking out at the grocery store?
Hey, Drance, what do you think Kiefer Sherwood can bring to this
team
offensively?
Can produce offensively.
It's like, my God. Janet? And my answer keeps being, I mean, I think he can produce offensively, but that's not the job description.
Yeah. I mean, we had a little bit of this conversation yesterday on the show, and for me, it's just they have so many other options up the lineup, right, that it would be very surprising. Like, I want him to produce offensively, but in a bottom six role. That doesn't equate to and earn a top six opportunity.
No, but if you put him in the top six, right, if you put him with Pettersson and DeBrusk, and it's like, well, what can he produce offensively? It's like, I don't care. I care how much he can help them score by winning battles and playing gritty. Like, can he add a policing element on a line with Pettersson? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Regardless of where he plays, the thing that Sherwood needs to deliver on isn't goals, right? It's the two-way play. It's the snarl. It's playing to an identity that this team didn't have enough of last season, right? Like, that's task one, whether he's on the second line or on the fourth line. And this guy's got enough talent that I think if he's on the fourth line, he'll give you 10 to 15 goals. And I think if he plays with Pettersson and company, he can give you 20. Like, I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is whether or not, especially early on in the year in Dakota Joshua's absence, is whether or not they'll have enough guys that can bring something different to the table so that we're sort of not watching like the cardio kings of hockey the way we so often did last season with, you know, those Mikheyev minutes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sometimes Phil DiGiuseppe, but sometimes he had some edge. Lafferty had edge like twice, right? Like that game against the Kings. Do you remember that one where mm-hmm. he was kind of like bothering the whole, like, this team needs that from their bottom six guys that aren't Dakota Joshua, and Garland mixes it up too, to his credit, right? That's what I want to see from Sherwood. That has to be like point one. So stop asking me about whether or not he's going to score. Start asking me about whether he's going to mix it up.
All right, there you go. You see, Drance, do not ask him about Kiefer Sherwood's offensive production. Ask well, him no. about how annoying he's going to
yes.
be in the bottom six.
Yes.
That's what you want to ask
That's
him
what
about.
You want to focus on. That's what matters.
Just a quick other note from the Canucks in terms of headlines. This was a bit of a subject of discussion, I know, amongst the fan base. The November 17th game against Nashville, which, of course, is on Grey Cup Sunday, changed from a 5 p.m. start time to a 7 p.m. start time, which, one, gives fans a chance to enjoy both. Also, should just make things logistically much less of a mess down there while both events are going on. So there you go.
So this is the topic that everyone at the grocery store was asking Moj about.
That's right. Yeah. Moj and Ryan Henderson. I think we're getting a lot of asks about this one. But there you go. I wanted to pass that along. Start time changed on November 17th from 5 to 7 p.m. Okay, let's get into the broadsheet. We haven't really done the broadsheet much on our first week back here because it's been pretty harmonious. And
it's been a,
I was thinking,
it's been a pretty narrow sheet.
Yeah, there you go. Great. It's been more of a, I was going to say tabloid, but that would be like it's explosive because tabloid's like the opposite of a broadsheet.
Right. I sort of think of a broadsheet as, yeah, anyway, whatever. Let's go on. Let's open the broadsheet.
Anyways, I was going to say, it doesn't feel like, with the exception of obviously Demko's status, there's no like one rumor central storyline this year for the Canucks. Like, I guess Besser's contract. But last year, of course, you were going into the season with, you know, Elias Pettersson.
Totally.
Extension eligible.
Will he or won't he?
Filip Hronek. What's going on with that, right? And there was this constant drip of rumors, reporting, updates on those storylines specifically. I don't know if there's going to be a central storyline like that in terms of broadsheet and the rumors and all that. However, as I say that, you know, Demko and the goaltending situation in a larger sense probably fits the bill, or is the closest thing to fitting the bill right now. And anyways, a big part of that is Ian Clark. And you remember, of course, in the summer, Ian Clark removed, I guess, demoted from goalie coach of the Canucks, became a goaltending scout. Marco Turenne is hired to come in as the new goaltending coach. And, you know, I think at the time, like anytime that happens, if somebody gets demoted at their job, that's probably not a sign that the relationship between them and their employer is, you know, at its highest level. So we hadn't really heard much beyond that, but today started to hear a little bit of reporting about Ian Clark and where that relationship could be going. Here's Elliot Friedman from the 32 Thoughts podcast that dropped earlier today.
I think that it's known that, you know, Clark may move on with the Canucks' blessing. I think they're not going to stand in the way here if an opportunity opens for him. You know, New Jersey already has like a goaltending department, but, you know, he knows Jacob Markstrom well. So we'll see, you know, we'll see where some of these situations kind of move to. But, you know, I think people who followed that situation much closer than I have, they really felt that it was likely that after it was decided that, you know, Clark couldn't go on ice every day this season for his own health because of injuries he suffered, that, you know, maybe this marriage wouldn't continue. And I'm curious to see where it's going to go because even though it looks like the relationship between Clark and the Canucks have kind of turned in a bad direction, he's a really sharp guy who really knows goaltending. And he really played a huge role in Thatcher Demko getting to be who he is and where he is. So I think teams would definitely value that kind of institutional knowledge.
So there's Elliot Friedman again from the latest 32 Thoughts on Canucks goaltending scout, now formerly the goalie coach, Ian Clark, saying that he might move on. The Canucks aren't going to stand in his way. Mentions New Jersey, also saying the relationship has kind of turned in a bad direction. Now, Rick Dhaliwal was on with Halford and Brough earlier today, added a few more details or at least kind of contributed his own take on it, which was basically that Clark went to the Canucks and said, because of my health, I can't be on the ice as the regular goalie coach day in, day out for this upcoming season. Dhaliwal kind of hinting that Clark probably wanted a director of goaltending title, a promotion as a result of that, right? To an off-ice role where you're more overseeing the work that a goalie coach is doing. And in Dhaliwal's words, don't think he expected to be named a scout. Also pointed out that Clark wasn't at the main training camp in Penticton. And Dhaliwal saying that, yes, the relationship has been damaged. So you take that all into account, right? And a guy with Ian Clark's resume, it's no surprise that he would be looking for other opportunities around the league. And it's no surprise that other teams would be very, very interested in having his services in their organization.
So I think this is a touch grass moment for me where I need to touch grass a little more often. I'm a little surprised by the reaction to this one because, I mean, have you ever been at a place of work where someone got demoted and was like, great,
and was super happy about it?
You know, like, even if your responsibilities are changing, but you lose like the additional honorific, like, we all know how that we all know the score there.
Mm-hmm.
And surely we should know enough about Jim Rutherford and his experience to have a sense that, like, you know, when you demote a guy so that he's easier for another team to hire away from you. You know, this guy's not new. Like, it's not like he's unfamiliar with how these institutions work and how to operate them. You know what I mean? Like, come on. So I just feel like this is one that has been telegraphed for a bit. We sort of knew in August that there were competing timelines on when exactly Clark had informed the Canucks that he wasn't going mm-hmm. to be able to continue this season. You know, the club sort of has suggested that they were surprised by the timeline. There's sort of been a conflict in terms of when they knew or accounts, various accounts of when exactly the club knew that he wasn't coming back. The demotion side of this is obviously massive. And then, yeah, is anyone surprised that Ian Clark, one of the most successful goalie coaches the last 25 years, would generate interest around the league? Friedman mentioned New Jersey, where you've got the connection with Jacob Markstrom. But what about Florida, where you've got the connection with both Bobrovsky and Roberto Luongo, who runs that goalie department?
Yeah, my question there in Florida would be, like, does Ian Clark want to work under a director of goaltending, or does he want to be the director of goaltending somewhere?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's a fair question, right? At least there's, there's relationships there.
And there's all sorts of ways to tweak
structure
a title.
Things. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's just mm-hmm. a matter of tweaking the title, that tends to be relatively easy to figure out. Like, I think Luongo's title is something like executive, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think he's one of those gets paid by the word guys in terms of his title. So lots of different ways that you could finagle it. Yeah. Yeah. His title's special advisor to the general manager. I don't see a director
right.
of goaltending on staff. And Rob Tallis was Luongo's goalie coach. He's their current. He's still the Panthers goalie coach. You've got Bobrovsky. You've got Frankie Allaire in the mix. I mean, that's a robust goalie department, and Clark spends his off seasons in Florida. Like, that to me would be the one to watch.
The other thing I'll add in terms of kind of the inevitability of this is everything we hear about Ian Clark's intensity, competitiveness, all of that, right? Like, the only way it would have made sense, okay, now he's just a goalie scout in the Canucks organization, is if he really wanted to step back from any sort of daily grind in the NHL, right? And just wanted to kind of keep his toe or keep his foot in the door, keep involved like that. But again, everything we hear about the drive he has suggests that wasn't going to be the case long term. So not a surprise really at all. And I guess the other question that this brings up is with the report specifically, not just that, hey, they went in a different direction and now he might move on, but specifically that the relationship soured, the relationship got damaged, it turned in a bad direction. What does this mean, if anything? And can we even answer this question right now about how the Canucks are going to handle their goalies differently going forward, right? Like, what does it mean about Thatcher Demko's workload when he's healthy, his practice schedule, all of those things, and how much is that question related to why the relationship, in the Friedman's words, turned in a bad direction?
Yeah, I mean, we won't know, right? And Marco Terenius is going to be a first-year goalie coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth noting that, like, he sort of ran splits in his few years in Abbotsford, right? Like 44 is the most games his starter played.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a Jeremy Colleton thing? Is that a player development thing, from the Canucks? Or was that sort of Marco Terenius's view of how to do things? He's obviously got a deep track record working with Artur Shelovs. They now have brought in Kevin Lankinen. Demko, will be new to him. Right. He'll have been on the ice with him at previous Canucks camps and stuff. But there's, going to be some relationship building to work through there. Although that was true for Clark and Demko. Right. Like, there was a lot of things about Demko as a prospect, for example, that would have run contrary to what Clark says he wants in goaltending prospects. Right. Mm. Like, Demko had to win Clark over when their arranged marriage began. And obviously they did fabulous work together. So, look, I think when I think about this situation all told, and you've got the uncertainty with Demko, right?
Yep.
You've got the possibility of three goaltenders. You've got Shelovs having, dealt with at least some sort of nagging injury over the course of the summer. And also, having pressed really hard to get an NHL opportunity, that really mattering to him. And you throw in sort of this Clark side of it too. And I mean, I brought up the contrast with my belief in this club's ability to improve as a rush attacking team, but it's like the vibe is not great.
On the goaltending side.
In the blue paint for Vancouver, the vibe is not great going into this season. Now, I think the Lankinen signing helps alleviate some of that, especially because they were able to time it before John Gibson got hurt.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, that's probably a $500,000 left on the table for Lankinen. So that's a bit of a narrow escape from a Canucks perspective. It also gives them some baseline, some security if things go south with, an untested Shelovs or if Demko misses more time. So the Lankinen signing helps, I think, alleviate some of these concerns, but not all of them, right? This is an area where boardroom and on the ice, the club is going in to this season with question marks and questions around them that, I'd say we haven't had in the crease in Vancouver since the Luongo trade.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah.
Like, it's been almost 20 years since the goalie graveyard question was even a relevant one in this marketplace. And yet, I'm not saying
it was. I guess it would be like when it was Anders Nielsen and Jacob Markstrom before Markstrom won that competition and established himself as a really good goalie.
Right.
That was the last time I remember where it was like, ooh, I don't know about this.
Okay, so yeah. I think it's fair to say like once in almost 20 years,
yep,
we've gone into the season with more questions around Canucks goaltending. Just worth noting, especially because our expectations are so high in a way they absolutely were not going into the Markstrom-Ullmark season.
One other thing I'll say about this, and just the question of Demko's workload, and as much as I don't like to give kudos to Rick Dhaliwal, I do think he made a good point at Halford and Brough, which is as much influence as Ian Clark obviously had for the Canucks on goaltending decisions and workload and all of that, this is an organizational thing, right? And especially for the head coaches. And yeah, Travis Green and Bruce Boudreau played Thatcher Demko a lot because they felt they had to win games, right? But it's not as if that was solely coming from Ian Clark. Like, it was all his idea to, you know, put this massive workload on Demko. So you can switch to the goalie coach if you think, okay, hey, this guy has a better philosophy on rest and practice and recovery and all of that. But if you want to limit your goaltender's burden, it has to come, it can't just be on the goalie coach, it has to come from the head coach and from management as well. That's what I want to see changed when Thatcher Demko is back.
Well, I'd add this, like, I don't have any indication necessarily that like played a role in how this all went down.
Okay,
but if it did, I think that's a bad process. I don't think you want to make like an emotional decision where you're suggesting XYZ about a guy's philosophy contributed to, you know, an injury outcome, especially when you're talking about goaltenders. Like, teams are using 3-4 goaltenders. Goaltenders get hurt a lot. Knees, hips, the demands of the position, and especially the contemporary way it's played, are through the roof. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know of any. I strongly doubt that any team has like a system that actually gives them a competitive advantage in that area. I literally think it's one of the most variable positions and one of the most physically demanding. And if that's sort of part of the reason here, I think I'm selling on that logic and actually would be worried that this club's made an emotional decision. Again, I don't have any information that that's what's happened here, but if it has, like, because I think a lot of fans talk about it. There's been some media speculation about it. And I just want to point out that, like, even if that's a part of the explanation, I actually think that's more concerning than if this were a decision made for sort of like a personality reasons or overall goalie philosophy reasons.
All right, lineup notes for tonight. Rick Tocchet said yesterday Kevin Lankinen will start in this one. The Canucks have announced the roster that's going to Seattle. There's not going to be a game day skate for the playing group, so we won't have line combinations or anything like that until warmups. But roster includes at the top end of a lineup Besser, Pettersson, Philip Hronek, Jake DeBrusk. In terms of other kind of no doubt about it NHLers, Danton Heinen, Pew Suter, Kiefer Sherwood, Derek Forbort, Tyler Myers, notably no Quinn Hughes, no JT Miller tonight. In terms of prospects, Sawyer Mineo, Danila Klimovich get their first preseason games tonight. So Sawyer Mineo getting a preseason game, good for him. Danila Klimovich as well. Max Sasson, Sammy Blais, Linus Karlsson, Christian Willanen all playing their third straight preseason game, and Atu Ratu and Lekker Mäki get a game off after playing the first two.
Yeah, Kudryavtsev is a really interesting one to watch for me tonight. Just want to spotlight that.
Mm-hmm.
Looked pretty close to being pro level in my view, and Rick Tocchet sort of pointed him out, you know, from a crowd without prompting during camp as well for sort of how he performed and what he looked like. Obviously, Sammy Blais, especially with Tocchet's pointed commentary about his fitness, is going to play a lot here. And I know that people heard those comments about his fitness and sort of took it as a very bad sign, maybe partially, but like Dakota Joshua was the target 100%. Of that last year and ended up in a huge role in a breakout campaign. So I actually think I've liked a fair bit of what I've seen from Blais, and I wouldn't count him out yet from, cracking this roster or at least earning a contract.
I actually think the Joshua comments from last year about fitness are really important to keep in mind, not just for comments about fitness, but for like any quote unquote negative comments from Rick Tocchet at this point, right? Like, even if he's like, hey, he's not doing this defensively, it's important to remember that's not Tocchet, you know, constructing a reason to cut him. That's just him being honest. But if the guy improves in that, he's going to get the opportunity from Tocchet, right? I don't think that just applies to fitness. I think it applies to a whole bunch of other things.
JT Miller not going, I've been making fun all week of people who think that he's hurt because he's been practicing a ton. I'd say if he doesn't play one of the next, like, Tocchet originally said he'd play two games. So if he doesn't play one of the other two this weekend, I'm certainly not going to be laughing anymore, and I'll have to capitulate for having made fun of it. So we'll see. But it's interesting at this point.
All right. And Jet Wu and Guillaume Brisebois clear waivers. No surprise there. They're signed to Abbotsford. No other cuts announced as of yet today for the Canucks. But we'll update you on that if it happens. By the way, preseason coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Tiletown. As BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season, receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details.
You nailed that read. Canberra was so fired up.
I honestly love doing reads.
Yeah, you're going to...
It's like one of my... It's one of my favorite parts of the job.
The clients love you doing reads.
Thank you.
Great.
I'm glad. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll look ahead again to the game against the Kraken tonight.
You know what my favorite part of doing reads is?
What?
When you get to do the small print at the end.
Yeah, you love that.
I love that. Like, use your game sense, but responsibly. Like, when you get to, like, for no reason whatsoever, drop the octave to, like, make it clear that it's fine print.
Yeah.
I love that.
That is your favorite
rules
part.
Rules and restrictions
may
apply.
All right, Allison Lucan from Root Sports covering the Kraken. She joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
No refunds on offer.